What Witch, This, That, or the Other? From Bonnaroo to Coachella, traversing the music festival landscape can be tricky. That's where we come in with high fives for everyone. The What Podcast with Brad Barry, Lord Taco, dedicated to exploring the entire festival scene.
Brad has worked in the radio industry for more than 20 years and currently lives in Brooklyn, where he is program director for three stations, including one in New York, one in Detroit, and one in Miami.
Barry's been a reporter for the Chattanooga Times Free Press, covering all aspects of the entertainment industry since 1987. That's before you were born.
Lord Taco, the smart guy who makes these podcasts on our website at thewhatpodcast.com work, also really good at identifying babies, loves blue-haired moms, PBR, and his beautiful Volkswagen bus.
We all fell in love with the Bonnaroo Festival years ago, not only because of the amazing bands that play there every year, but also because of the incredible community spirit that has developed around it. Radiate positivity.
And we really like talking about the inside baseball stuff when it comes to putting on a huge music festival. So join us.
You can hear the What Podcast on the Consequence Podcast Network or anywhere you find your favorite podcasts.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Journey through the stories that define the artists playing Bonnaroo. Who are they? What are they? What will you see? The what? Which bands? This year, that matter.
Yay.
With Brad Steiner and Barry Corder.
Another Bonnaroo veteran that we've lost probably way too early. Probably is not the right word. But December 8th, we lost Juice WRLD. And Barry, I was going back and looking at all of the artists that have played Bonnaroo that we've lost. And the list is like the heavy hitters of the last 25 years. It is, you could create an entire festival just on the artists that we've lost in the last 15 years. It's not even the young ones, though. It's the ones that, It's not even the old ones, though. It's not even the ones that, you know, you can be like, man, we had a good run with them. It's the young ones that get, I mean, Mac Miller. You know, it would Juice WRLD. Those are the ones that really, really, really hurt. Right. You a big Juice WRLD guy? So it's weird because you're Barry without an A, and he was Juice WRLD without an O. Burry. It's Barry Corder. It's Brad Steiner. Welcome to the What Podcast, a podcast for Bonnarooians by Bonnarooians. Now, there's so much to get to, and we have a load to talk about. But real quick, I want to go through the list of artists that we've lost. And if I've missed one, please hit us up at Brad Stinks on Twitter. What is your Twitter, by the way, Barry? I can't even remember.
Barry JC.
Okay, Barry JC. BRRYJC? Okay. And then, of course, the What Underscore Podcast. So you've got Juice WRLD. We've lost Charles Bradley, Solomon Burke, which was one of the great. There's two specific shows that I remember that I knew I was seeing the last hurrah. I knew it was going to be dangerously close to the last show that they ever did. And in fact, one person on this list, it was the very last show they ever did. Solomon Burke, one of those guys who is the king of Philadelphia soul. And I am a unabashed 60s soul obsessed lunatic. And Solomon Burke was my guy. There's times when you know that you're never going to get this ever again. And I know that you have your favorite artists on the planet, and I know that you're probably going to go see them at Bonnaroo if they show up at Bonnaroo, but more often than not, you could buy a ticket and go see them. Solomon Burke was not that guy. You could not just go find a ticket for Solomon Burke. So the fact that he was at Bonnaroo, it was like it was specifically chosen for me. And I got to watch the king of Philadelphia soul in front of maybe 125 people sing every great 60s and 70s hit he's ever had. He took me to church, and I knew it. I was bawling throughout that show because I knew this was the last time I was ever going to see him.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. We've talked about this before. Again,
You know, I didn't have him on the list, but thank you for adding him. Yeah, Alan's just on. I actually didn't know that. Wow. Really? Yeah. I wonder if when I went to Music Midtown in 2001 and I stood next to a guy with a kid on his shoulders and we were at the Rick James concert, I wonder if he had the same feeling about his kid. Years and years. This show's going to happen forever. Mac Miller, I'm sure. You know, in 2012, when you know, Mac Miller was still a guy that, you know, you had to be in the know to really like it and get it. But, you know, he's gone. Of course, the Tom Petty's. We lost James Brown. We've lost Dr. John. You know, the only comic that I can remember that we've lost is Ralphie May, former, he's a Chattanooga kid. He was born and raised in Chattanooga/Houston. Sharon Jones, of course, we've lost. And then the one that I'll double back everything that I've said about Solomon Burke. I had the exact same feeling about Bobby Womack. And there is not a better pure soul singer than Bobby Womack. And he was the guy that, you know, when James Brown was getting all the credit, it was really Bobby Womack that was the guy, him and Syl Johnson. You know, talk about somebody I can't believe he doesn't do shows anymore, and if he did one show, I'd probably ever see him at Bonnaroo, Syl Johnson. But Bobby Womack, his last show he ever played was at Bonnaroo. He died a month later. No, because if you think about it, that's only like a dozen artists. But that lineup, if you go through Juice WRLD, Charles Bradley, Solomon Burke, Sharon Jones, Bobby Womack, Dr. John, James Brown, Tom Petty, Mac Miller, Ralphie May, Alan Toussaint, that is a lineup, man. That is a lineup. I've got to be missing somebody, man. I've got to be missing a big one, too, and that's what I'm worried about. So if you hit us up if I've missed anyone. And if you've seen any of these shows, tell us what you felt. Did you have the same feeling I did, like I did to Solomon Burke and Bobby Womack? I mean, Solomon Burke hit me hard. Hit me really, really hard because the man was barely able to walk out onto the stage, and he had to sit on a throne and have, I guess, his daughter or whoever his girl was there at the side literally pat him down from sweat the entire day.
Well, I think it's important to know because you and I get this sense of it. I think we do. And I know I do. I know it comes with age and you can make fun of me, but you don't get to see these people. You know, when they're gone, they're gone. We don't get to see them. We don't get to see Noah. I never saw them. So, you know, I kind of felt that way last year about Tom Pride. I felt that way about the country,
the Grand Ole Opry. Yeah.
These guys, you know, that was important to me to be able to see that. I get that the show wasn't what we wanted. And, you know, that's maybe not for everybody to go see a show. You're not going to enjoy.
Do you feel as though, and yes, the John Prine and the Grand Ole Opry thing is one thing, but do you think that they've done a good job lately in the last couple of years with legacy acts? Or do you feel as though, like some people's theories are, that the legacy act has sort of gone away? But you were really excited about it.
I was extremely excited. I thought the show kind of like intervention. You know?
Yeah.
That's not their fault, but that's part of it. That's the struggle you get with legacy acts. Another one that comes to mind that I'm glad people saw that blows my mind in my root book was Wanda Jackson.
Man, see, the Wanda Jackson thing was going to be... I was hoping you were going to bring that up, because, boy, do I love Wanda Jackson. And she struggled at that show, and she said so. She was battling the heat. She was an hour late. She just didn't... Well, I ended up seeing Wanda Jackson twice on that tour, because I was so obsessed with her. I saw her in a sit-down theater, and then I saw her at Bonnaroo, and the Bonnaroo show was just one of these things like, oh, God, I hope she makes it. I hope she makes it. Because it's fun. It's a really, really fun show, but that it's those kind of acts, and precisely to your point, that I wonder if they're even paying attention to anymore. Because it takes somebody in that office to know exactly what they're doing and to be able to find the person. And here's what I'll say, and I know, well, I don't know, but I hope to God the AC people are listening, and I'm begging you, find Syl Johnson just for me. If there's anything that you could do just for me, find Syl Johnson, who is the guy that's been sampled more than any other 60s soul artist ever other than James Brown. Find him from Chicago, drag him to the farm, and please put him on a stage, and I don't care if 35 people are there. Now, back to another legacy act, but never really got, I mean, he wasn't there because he was dead, but William Onyebor. They did the Atomic Bomb William Onyebor tribute, and again, there might have been 300 people at it. You know, it's these kind of acts that, like, just don't move the needle for very many people, but boy, do they give Bonnaroo a slice and an angle that nobody else has. Right, I know, you're right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One usher said, all I know is that my boss came up to me and said, take care of that.
Wait, that wasn't me?
Wasn't me.
Oh, damn it.
But that was cool. You know, to see an angel of the kids who I adore. Like you said, 300 people. I get it from this your point is, just to be able to say you saw them.
Well, Sharon Jones always brought a show. She never left anything to be wanted. Charles Bradley's show to me was, man, that was the pinnacle Bonnaroo moment, because it's a Saturday or Sunday, I can't remember. I think it's a Sunday. That was that church moment that I've been begging for them to bring back. I want church on the what stage at 2 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Charles Bradley, maybe 1,000 people tops at the what stage, and he came out at the end of the show and hugged every single damn person in that audience, and it was unbelievable. I'll never forget that moment, and it was like him saying thank you and appreciating what he had gone through for 30 years to get to that moment, and he had it, and he got it, and he wanted to say thank you to every single one of them. You know, there's somebody in that office that pays attention to this. There's somebody that does it. I don't know how much attention they're paying to it, but if there's an audience that still appreciates it, I think it's the Bonnaroo audience.
I agree. And the fact that you're asking this question, I think it says a lot to that. That to me is the best part of Bonnaroo, that it's good.
Yeah.
And you go on with it, not just Monday or Tuesday, but months later, and realize, wow, I got to see so much.
Right. Now, I appreciate you joining us on this episode. There's so much that we've got to get to, and we spent a lot of time, probably way too much time on the in memoriam stuff. But there have been Roo clues that have come out. We've got news about the podcast that we want to share with you that we're really, really excited about. There have been lineups like crazy dropping over the last month since we've been back. I mean, the last time that we did a show was the Roo crossover podcast with the Roo Bus, and the amount of information that has happened in this last month, is baffling. There's so much going on. So I was just going to run through some of it, but I think that we probably should start with, well, actually, I don't know where to start. Because I want to talk Lizzo. I want to talk the other lineups. I want to talk the Rue Clues. You want to go through some of the Rue Clues first? Okay. All right. So there have been five. There's been five Rue Clues. And here's what I know about the lineup. The lineup is coming out the second week of January. And my bet is, based on the history of Bonnaroo and going through all of my old emails and how they position it, I'm going January 14th. It's a Tuesday. They normally like to release the lineup on Tuesday, and it's going to be one of these first thing in the morning things as well, like they've been doing over the past few months. So my bet, and this is my educated hunch, based on what I know and the people I know, I'm going with January 14th. But, you know, as always, I reserve the right to be wrong. Now, you go through what the Rue Clues have been saying, and I can't remember how many they've done in the past, but we've already have five. First is Loop Daddy. Now, which is weird because that's what we call Barry. I didn't know that Barry was going to be... I don't know Loop Daddy, and someone's going to have to. We need a guy. We need a guy on Loop Daddy. Do we have a correspondent for Loop Daddy? I need Loop Daddy. I need a Loop Daddy guy or girl. Rez was the third clue, and boy, do people love Rez. And again, I'm going to assume that it's one of these EDM acts, and it's one of these that is constantly talked about, but it's like, for me, it's like the show Lost. I never watched it, but it's so far into the mainstream culture, I've lost it. Like, there's no way that I could catch up now. It feels like Rez is such a big deal to so many of these people that I feel like I'm just now joining the party way too late. King Gizzard is another one that is a big hit on the Reddits. And then the two that I know pretty well and I can tell you a couple stories about is Pine Grove and Still Woozy. Pine Grove's a struggle for me. As an indie alternative kid who lives and breathes that thread of music, Pine Grove is such a struggle for me because they simultaneously are such a great set of songwriters. That kid can really, really write a song. But so often, the way that it is then performed and executed comes across so whiny. There's just this whine about it that is really, really tough. Now, Old Friends is damn near one of the best written songs of the decade. The last album, they had a song called Old Friends, and it sort of chronicled through a relationship that went wrong and how he was too wrapped up into himself, and he didn't really realize it until he ran into an old friend on the train, and it turns out somebody close to both of them had died, right? It's a brilliant song. I mean, the way that's crafted and put together is insanely brilliant. But I specifically went to a music festival that shall not be named to see Pine Grove. That's the only reason I went to see Pine Grove. And I went to it, and they played that song, which was at the time their biggest hit. They played it first. And guess when I showed up? About 7 minutes into the set. They played the biggest song, their only song, first, and I missed the entire thing. Here's the other thing that they do on stage that I swear to God I hope that they have fixed, because I really want to like them. I hope you understand that I want to like Pine Grove a lot, because I like him so much as a songwriter. They wear shorts on stage.
They take their shirts off.
No, they don't take their shirts off, thank God, but they wear shorts on stage, and that is a deal breaker for me. It's a deal breaker. You're not taking this seriously. MGMT did the same thing at Hangout, and I'll never forgive them for it. You've got to take this more seriously than wearing a T-shirt and some Bahama John shorts. You can't do that to me.
Yeah, you mentioned that as well with another artist about parents. I get it. You know, it's all about image.
I just want you to take this as seriously as I'm taking it. That's all. That's all. Okay, and then finally, Still Woozy. Dude, I love Still Woozy. Still Woozy's my Quinn 92. Now, I told you all year last year how much I loved Quinn 92. This guy, Still Woozy... Yes, and knowing him now on a personal level, I understand why he's doing it. I understand the bit that he's trying to pull off. But Still Woozy is sort of in that vein. And I was lucky enough to have dinner with Interscope Records the day that they got signed during Lollapalooza. And the way that the record people were talking about Still Woozy, it's like they had uncovered, you know, I mean, Taylor Swift is too far, but it's like they had found the next great artist, the next big one. And they, believe me, they feel so strongly about Still Woozy, the way that they stream, the way that they sell. They think they have a monster. They think they have an underground monster that's waiting to erupt. And if that's the case, and you have somebody like Interscope Records who feels so strongly about an artist, that means they're going to put a lot of money into them. That means they're going to put a lot of investment into them. And you might be looking this time next year saying, oh my God, Still Woozy played Bonnaroo probably on a Thursday night? Wow. That band, those guys are really, really good. In fact, I don't even know if it's those guys. It might just be a guy now that I think about it. But either way, give them a listen because they're going to be a Thursday night stunner. I'm taking the very educated assumptions based on the people on Reddit that make a lot of sense. You know, I mean, these people are really obsessed with this. I mean, they know who's touring where, who's going to be where, and does it fit into, you know, an overall tour, you know, and this is what they've got. Now, I don't, if they're wrong, they're wrong, but I think that I trust these guys. I trust these guys a lot on their son. But no, they haven't, but here's the thing. When you get to a point where you've needled through so many clues and you've come up with so many different options and everybody gets to a consensus that yes, it's King Gizzard or yes, it's Pine Grove, I'm going to go with it. With that being said, there's so many other lineups that have been announced. So many lineups. They desperately want you to buy these tickets for Christmas. Let's go through a couple. Electric Forest was announced, and again, Electric Forest is one of these that's just, you're not going to find me there. And I know that it's really, really popular. It sold out really, really quickly, and everybody I've ever known has loved it. If there is a more highly sought after or thought of festival in the country, I would be surprised. I mean, Electric Forest is way up there on user experience and how people think of it. I've never heard someone have a bad word about their experience at Electric Forest. Well, that's AC and AC. So did our own Moon River get in there? Did we? Okay. I don't know. Really? Yeah. And not the New Orleans Jazz Festival, huh? Because is that not the same people, too? Oh, stop it. Throw that list in the trash, Barry Corder. Throw it in the trash because Music Midtown is garbage. It is garbage. I'm stunned. What did they do a description on each one of these festivals? Read to me what they wrote about Music Midtown. I hate to be so mean about this, but I've never had worse musical user experiences than at Music Midtown. Yeah, it does.
So it just goes on and on. Yeah. I mean, I think it's experience. I don't know. I didn't read the entire list.
That's stunning. I can't take that list seriously all of a sudden. I can't take it seriously.
I always teach you, you write yours on your own VIP. You got my header.
there's just no culture to. Oh, I'm not going to get it. I'm not going to argue about. I'm not going to. I'm stunned. So you've got the Something in the Water Festival in Virginia Beach, which, by the way, I need to say something about the Something in the Water Festival. I have never been, and I'm sure it's a wonderful festival. But can we please, as a collective group, fight back at people who alphabetize their lineup on their poster? Something in the Water has a real lineup, but it took me to get to the P's to see Post Malone. That is a problem. You know, when I know that it's dopey, but that kind of stuff to me matters, and I didn't want to look through your whole lineup to find artists that I might like. I want you to tell me who's your best. Tell me. It's bad for the eye, and I hate to make such a weird argument about this, but Dear Something in the Water Festival, you might have a great festival, but I can't go because I can't read your poster.
Sitting around talking about how much we like Bonnaroo, and now here we are in December doing, how many did you say this is, what, our 80th or 60th podcast?
Oh man, that's a conversation for Lord Taco. I don't know the numbers. Well, but there's so many that... Well, I know, but then you go to the festival graveyard and you find Exit 111 Fest, which was... universally, Exit 111 Fest was universally praised. People really, really enjoyed their time. As odd as a fit as it was, and as odd as the space was, people really, really loved it. But, you know, it's going to find the graveyard because there are things like the Rockville Fest in Daytona Beach that's servicing that group of people of the Metallicas and the Deftones of the world.
That's in there again, what you and I talk about every time. It's, we got to have a mission. There is a right way and a wrong way. And that's why I think we're able to do what we do with this. It's not just us, you know, being fanboying. You and I have learned through conversations with Ashley and Jeff Cuellar and, you know, the industry people. There's a right way and a wrong way. And I don't think that Exit 111 people, I don't think there was a 100% connection. Fans like you said, I have not heard anybody
Let me tell you something. If that was less than 100% commitment on everybody involved, then they're better at this than damn near everybody that's ever done a music festival. Because if that was 60%, wow. I mean, that's really well done if you could pull off 60% of your, you know, care in the world and you still pull off Exit 111 Fest. That was universally praised. And then the final one that I wanted to bring up was Hangout Fest, because I don't know how out in the public this is, but I'm going to talk about it anyway. But apparently, Sean O'Connell, who is the guy that was really early on for Bonnaroo, he helped with the booking and helped with the radio compound and some of the media stuff, went to be the CEO of Hangout Festival years ago. And I give him 100% of the credit for turning Hangout Festival into what it is today. He made it a much better user experience. He turned it into a major, major product. And, you know, he was helped with Golden Voice when Golden Voice came in and sort of, you know, bought it, you know, most of the shares of it. But Sean O'Connell is one of the great minds in this world when it comes to music festivals, and he did an absolute phenomenal job with Hangout. He's no longer there. Lineup that you see, from what I understand, is not the person. He didn't book this lineup. He booked most of the ones in the years past. He didn't book this one. He's off to doing other things that, you know, I don't know if are public or not. But the guy knows what he's doing, so he deserves a ton of credit for what Hangout is. No matter if you like Hangout or if it's a festival for you or a lineup for you, I'm telling you, based on everything that I have gone to, all the festivals I've gone to, Hangout is as good of an experience as it gets as far as an organization is concerned.
Yeah.
And you would have known that had we been able to put put out our Hangout episode last year. Well,
how do you get a crowd from point A to point B? How do you make sure the vendors are happy? How do you make sure, you know, everyone's happy?
Yeah.
You
go through the Hangout lineup, and you've got Chili Peppers, Post Malone, Billie Eilish, Marshmello, Lana Del Rey. Shockingly, I'm no Red Hot Chili Peppers historian, so I can't talk too much about, you know. Okay, well, good for you. You've got a sock on your groin right now. You're so excited. Then you got Cage the Elephant, Ilium, Kane Brown, Rainbow Kitten Surprise, etc. Look, I mean, Hangout Festival is a top 40 lineup. It is as big of a top 40 festival as you're going to find, the second being probably Music Midtown, and at least in the Southeast. But Hangout Festival has a very specific crowd they're going for. They have a very specific lineup that they do, and it is all built on how they can maximize a top 40 top 40 listener, top 40 lifestyle. And in that way, you know, they did a very good job. And what's crazy about Hangout Festival is it is going to sell out before the end of the year. When I talk to the way that things have, the RSVPs and the tiers, they have sold so quickly and the numbers are so high. Hangout Festival is going to sell out that quickly. You've got to be doing something right. Now, they don't care what your opinion on the lineup is. If they can sell, because I was told, this is the number that is so crazy to me. For every ticket over capacity that is sold, right? So they'll hit their capacity number, and then every ticket after that, that they have to go to the city and say, hey, by the way, can we get this upped by 10,000 people or 1,000 people? Every ticket sold over capacity equals $1,000 in pure profit. That is unbelievable to me. Well, I was the guy. I didn't want to go. Because my argument was always, if I go to Hangout Festival at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, I'm stuck in Gulf Shores. But then I realized when I went, I'm stuck at Gulf Shores. I mean, it's actually pretty, it's really well done. Well, that's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point. It's a really good point. So, again, this is the Bonnaroo podcast for Bonnaroovians by Bonnaroovians. Barry Quarter. I'm Brad Steiner. This is the What Podcast. Follow along, what_podcast.com or, I'm sorry, what_podcast on Twitter, whatpodcast.com for all of our previous episodes and season. I guess when we hit lineup day will start our third season. Our third official season, you know, we're set up for about 15 to 16 shows, but throughout next year and throughout the third season of the Bonnaroo podcast, the What podcast, we are adding a little wrinkle. And we're really, really happy to announce because, and by the way, not only happy to announce, but also very scared to announce. I'm very nervous about this because this is a direct reflection on how much we're actually liked and if you actually like the product enough. But it was something that we struggled with. I'll be totally honest and vulnerable with you for a second. It was something that we struggled with. We talked about over and over and over. We had cold feet and then we started and then we got cold feet again. It's very nerve-wracking to put yourself out like this, but we are now officially on Patreon. We're doing the regular podcast thing and, you know, asking you if you would like to be a part of our Patreon. there is several levels that you can join with, and as low as $2 you can be a Patreon, and up to $20 a month you can be a Patreon. And I wanted to go through some of the levels in which we've sort of set up, because we kind of wanted to create some cool things that allow you to be a Patreon, and more than just, hey, we'll talk to you some more, you know, we'll do more content, which is cool. And we think that people like content. We can do it. I mean, not like we got anything to do. But we wanted to add some more things to it so that you can feel even more tied to this product as you already are.
Yeah, this is pretty cool. I'm excited about it. I'm nervous as you are. It's, it feels like passing that note across the aisle to the girl next to you and ask her to check one of those boxes.
Right. It's interesting you put it like that, like, do you like me, yes or no? To me, it feels like I'm sitting outside homeless, asking for a few change. It's sort of as if I'm some sort of busker.
Yeah, well, I didn't feel that.
That guy's guitar is out of tune. We've got five different levels of Patreons. The $2 a month for a commitment of 5 months gets you a shout on the show every show. And we'll go through a list of them at the end of the show, and we'll thank you immensely for your support. That's the high five. The Marty McFly, it's $4 a month, and we've added our own What Podcast Koozie that will also keep your PBR cold and allow you to be a good dancer. It's pretty good. Now, of course, this is a per month basis, and we hope that you stick around for the 5 months from January to the festival date, mainly because these things that we are printing cost money, and we hope that you don't just get it for $4. Okay. Then the third package is named after our good friends Repeat Repeat. We've named it the Glazed Package. You get, of course, the mention on the show, you get the koozie, and you get a What Podcast t-shirt that even makes Barry Corder look sexy. Yeah. Yeah, and even those shows, so you start at that package, and we're going to do secret shows for the people in that package and above. So if you can give us $6 a month, we're going to do secret shows that not only are available just to Patreons, but they're also going to be video shows. We'll do the podcast, and it will actually be videoed, and you can see our faces as if that would, be interesting to you in any way. Well... Yeah. You're better off not wearing one. And then the fourth package, Bring Back the Arch. You get all the things before, plus something that we're really excited about. You get the koozie, you get the t-shirt, you get the mention, you get Barry Corder being sexy, you get to be a good dancer. But the fourth package, Bring Back the Arch, we are going to custom make you a mixtape. One of us, either Barry, Lord Taco, or myself, will make a mixtape for you for only $10 a month for the period of the What Podcast from January until June, which is what, $50? $50, you get a t-shirt, a koozie, and a mixtape. And then finally, the Mike Tyson. Now, we'll talk about the joke, the inside joke about this, but for $20 a month. Now, I know $20 a month is a lot, but we hope that this is worth it for you. You get all of the stuff in front of it. You get all of the benefits of the tiers in front of it. Plus, we want to have you on the show. We want to spend an entire episode just dedicated to you. Now, each one of these tiers has a cap, and I think there's only like 15 per package, and then the final one's only 5. So there's only 5 people that can do $20 a month. We're not asking for a lot. We just hope that you like us enough to throw us a little bit so that we can, keep this thing going on a more regular basis, because turns out we haven't had somebody call us and offer us, say, like $80,000 just to take over the product, which, by the way, we'll take that phone call. So there you go. The Patreon available at thewhatpodcast.com. Yeah, it would mean a lot to us, who doesn't want to see Barry Corder in some sort of sexy negligee? And the wife. All right, so the other thing that I wanted to get to was I'd like to talk a little bit about Lizzo, because, boy, I could talk about Lizzo all day. And I know that if you follow any of the Reddits or the Infaroos, it feels as though, you know, they are at a breaking point with the Lizzo conversation.
It's pretty nuts. I follow it all that. So, by the way, we should say, I hope she gets better. If she's sick, she's sick. That's the worst crowd I've ever had.
We have tried to do a podcast for the last 2.5 weeks, and every time we try to, one of us has been sick. He's down. So, yeah, so we got Lord Taco. The Lizzo thing is such a confusing argument for me. This woman, when I found her, I was lucky enough, and I don't mean to pat myself on the back, but I was lucky enough to be the very first guy to ever play on the radio. And I stumbled upon her on a blog, and because of that, the record label literally called me and said, please stop playing this song. We don't know what we're doing with her yet. Well, I said no, and I kept playing it. Well, that forced them into moving it up a lot faster than they wanted. And they repaid me with this by coming to Chattanooga, bringing Lizzo to Chattanooga to play a free showcase for about 350 to 400 people on a random Tuesday afternoon. And in that moment, it was 5 months after I had started playing her. She was doing no free shows. Even then, you could start to feel the momentum starting to hit. And I'll never forget, in that moment, she comes to the Songbird South here in downtown Chattanooga. She shows up, and her manager says to me, we will be doing stadiums by the end of this tour. We're tracking on every metric. We see it happening. And even then, this was without a hit. She barely had a hit at the time, but the metrics were just moving in a way that they knew things were going to blow up. Whatever argument you want to make about somebody being a one-hit wonder or two-hit wonder or whatever, that's not how industry treats artists. They see the metrics and they see where things are going. They can track it very, very precisely, and they know exactly what the person's going to be worth 6, 8, 12 months from now, especially an artist like Lizzo. So even though I got to say things like I was the first in the country to play her, it didn't matter. It was predetermined. I mean, she was... I didn't know. Not at all. Not one... And they knew it. And they knew it because of the reactions from sales and streams and concert ticket sales. They knew it was something. They just needed to get the right... They needed an inside straight, right? And they got it. So when she... Well, I'm not gonna jump 10 feet or 10 steps in front of ourselves, but if Lizzo is actually a headliner and she's actually the first female headliner in Bonnaroo history, if she ends up being that, we will have our own Lizzo show, and I'll tell you some deep dark secrets about the Lizzo world, and you know, as far as I know them, and you know, I'll go back to that big box store theory that you have. Because I'm going to stun you with a couple of things of your theory. But when they told me that she was going to be doing stadiums and et cetera, at the beginning of the tour, mind you, this was May of earlier this year, okay? She gets to the event space. She's deathly sick. She's so sick. And she has to lay down. She was an hour and a half late getting on stage because she could not get off the couch. And even then, I noticed that she was just, I mean, going from date to date to date, city to city to city. And when she was doing it, she was doing it right. I mean, she was living it. And I said then, I was like, you guys, I love you and I love her, but you guys got to calm it down a little bit because she is hitting it hard. And because she gives so much of herself on stage every night, and she was doing so many nights in a row. And so to even be able to fit her into a small showcase in Chattanooga, Tennessee was stunning that they could make that happen. But that hasn't stopped. She has done. I saw a chart that went through the top performing artists of the year as far as tour is concerned, and she did like of all the artists, she did like the top five amount of dates of the entire year. She has just done so many dates, and she keeps coming back to cities and back to cities. She's got to have a break. She's got to have a break. So I can imagine how sick that she truly is if she's having to cancel Saturday Night Live, because I've seen her sick, and I bet that she's been sick for the better part of 6 months. And it's just it's bound to happen when your immune system breaks down. So
that's a separate issue.
Sure. All right. Now, I want to clarify a couple of things. Yeah, sure.
I was going to say she would be a bit of a different headliner in that it would be a projection type of thing, but based on what you said about her show, it's an event, right? I mean, if they got her, it's not just the one hit type of thing. She could do 90 minutes of an amazing show.
Look, I have seen this show almost 10 times this year. This show just keeps getting better and better and bigger. And when somebody wants to tell me that she is not a headliner, or if I read that, you know, she can't hit a note or she can't... Guys, what in the hell are you talking about? I have never, and I've been doing this 20 years, Barry, I have never seen a crowd react like they do at Lizzo shows. I've never seen it. And I don't mean to bloviate, and I don't mean to overstate this, but I have never heard a crowd lose their collective shit like I heard at the Tabernacle in Atlanta when I saw her earlier in the summer. This was the most amazing sound I have ever heard, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. The show just keeps getting bigger and bigger. What she's doing on stage keeps getting bigger and bigger. I've never been at the ground floor of something and been along for the ride and seen it happen. I have no personal stake in this, mind you. I've just been along for the ride because I've just been really lucky to go to a lot of the shows. They're just better and bigger every time that I go. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you know, if she misses a note or two, or if you don't know any of the songs, it is a damned blast. It is. Do you understand? I am a heterosexual male who knows all the Lizzo songs, but when Boys comes on, I'm screaming, I like boys. I like big boys. I like little boys. That is insane. That is a cult of personality that you can't get with damn near half of the industry. Half of the major artists in this, they would kill for what Lizzo has. And just because you're just now finding out about it does not mean that she is any less of a major, major headliner. And I read that, I read stuff like that, and I go through stuff like people, I read somebody write that Cardi B is a bigger star than Lizzo.
That's a good point. That's the point that we made, that I wanted to make, is maybe with the show,
it is a major show. It's a real show. Don't sleep on this. It is a major show. And she not only, she brings out guests every show. Every time. I've seen her, every time that I've seen her, there's Iggy Azalea's been there. Macaulay Culkin has been on stage. You know, she even called Missy Elliott on the speakerphone and tried to talk to her via the speakerphone. Everywhere you go, Bebe Rexha showed up. You know, now, granted, this may not be for you. If you are a Fish fan, I understand that this is not necessarily for you, but she is worthy of the big stage because that's how big that she is. You have to understand that this is as big of a zeitgeist and as big of an artist as you can imagine. And, you know, I read somebody say she's as big as, I would argue till I was blue in the face about her popularity and who she is and where she's going to be and where she's going to go versus Cardi B any day of the week, because Cardi B has a limitation on her show. It's a limitation. You get 2.5 minutes of a hit, song over. You get 2.5 minutes of a hit, song over. 2.5 minutes of a hit, a dance break, song over. That ain't Lizzo. Lizzo is banger after banger after banger, and it's non-stop pummeling you for damn near 75 minutes. So the other thing was, I tweeted this out the other day about how I got confirmation that she is at least $1 million. Now, I want to make something really, really clear. I was not confirming that she was going to be a Bonnaroo. And reading it back, I understand how somebody read it that way, and I'm sorry about that. That's not what I was saying. I can confirm 1,000,000% that she is $1 million. And that is the least amount of money that she is. Now, she got $1.5 million for her New Year's Eve show in Vegas. Now, New Year's Eve shows, of course, are at an inflated rate. But she is at least $1 million for just regular shows. I can't tell you what her festival price is going to be. So if U2 is $5 million and Post Malone is $2 million or whatever it is, Lizzo's right there. Lizzo's right there. She would be the first female headliner in the history of Bonnaroo, and she espouses everything that Bonnaroo is about. When it comes to culture, there is not a more culture fit than Lizzo in the way that her body positivity, the way that she is screaming about equality, how she wants everybody to feel included, and then at the end of the day, to love yourself. There is nobody that fits that brand better than Lizzo. She's part Oprah, part Beyonce, and they're going to get all of their money's worth for a buck and a half. So yes, it is at least, I know for a fact that you know, you can, she's turned down nothing but $500,000 offers for the last 3 months. It's been $500,000 offers, and they just roll their eyes and move along. You have to have $1 million just to book her, just to start. The other thing that I read about it is that she was a one-hit wonder. That's absurd. I can't even begin to tell you how absurd that is. You know, the way that people price artists are not based on chart position. They are based on how you can sell a ticket. And Lizzo has sold out every show that she has had for a year plus. And she's about to, by the way, have about, you know, a pocket full of Grammys come January. I told you this when we talked at the Rue Bus. I said that you're going to see her get some Grammy nomination. Yeah. Yeah, something absurd. She's got the most Grammy nominations of anybody. That's not a one-hit wonder. And yes, she's had one number one single. She's about to have two, and she'll have a third one by the time Bonnaroo gets around. It doesn't really matter. You know why Post Malone gets as much money as he does? It's because he sells out at every tier. It's because every time that he puts out a song, it streams and sales through the roof. Guess what? You know, the top, you know, 3 out of 25 songs in Chattanooga are streamed. It's Lizzo. And if that's Chattanooga, that's a deal in Atlanta. And that's a deal in Nashville. These songs, you may not know them, but they are major hits in the world that we are in now. Well, I needed to say some of this because it's the argument online about Lizzo not being a headliner is just, to me, just misses the entire mark. It misses the mark because it's not Tom Petty or Fish or U2 or the Rolling Stones. It doesn't mean it's not a headliner. Just because you don't understand who they are, or you don't like it, or you don't agree with the amount of money, that doesn't mean it's not a headliner. I wonder if there's anything else that we need to get to.
I think that's it.
Starting lineup day. Starting lineup day. We're going to be damn near every week until the festival. You know, that's going to take the efforts of somebody who can get us the lineup pretty soon. Yeah. I would love to. I mean, I want to be the first place that you go for the lineup because I don't know what they have planned. We normally don't, but if the rumors hold and it's Tool, Tame Impala, Lizzo, Vampire Weekend, Oysterhead. If that's our five, I have zero problem with any of that. I have zero problem. I think that is as good as you're going to get for this day and age. I think that's unique. I think that you can find the lanes that we talk about all the time through all six of those. I am totally okay 1,000,000% with that top two lines. Turn on those notifications. Turn those notifications on, because as soon as the lineup drops, the show will drop. Yeah. All right. There you go. Again, Patreon, thewhatpodcast.com. We would really appreciate your support. If you can, if you can't, that's okay too. We still love you, and we'll still give you high fives and hugs. And Barry will still be sexy, frankly. We'll still talk to you lineup day. Bye.
The stories that define the artists playing Bonnaroo. Who are they? What are they? What will you see? The what? Which bands? This year, that matter. Yay. With Brad Steiner and Barry Corder.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise. Having fun in the sun or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.